Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing great, Justin. How are you feeling?
Much better.
Well, last week you were doing 99% better. So how are you doing better than 99%?
100%, baby.
All right. We'll take it. For those of you on Patreon, look for an interview with me from a couple of pretty cool guys in Montreal, the Distortion Podcast.
I haven't even heard it yet. So I'm looking forward to hearing it. What are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight is a very mysterious case. It involves a 16-year-old teenager by the name of Annie McCann, who unexpectedly ran away from home, leaving behind a note that told her parents not to look for her. And within just a couple of days, she was found dead.
Over an hour away in Baltimore, and she lives in Virginia.
It's a mystery. And as we go through the case, I think you'll discover that this is very, very mysterious, much like the disappearance of Maura Murray is.
Yeah. 2008, Halloween in Alexandria, Virginia. Annie McCann is 16 years old, living at home with her parents. She is a junior in high school. She drives a white Volvo to and from school. She is a painter. She's an artist. Pretty good one, too. I've seen some of her artwork, and I was impressed. She has her dog that she loves very much, and lots of friends at school. Pretty good kid, right?
Well, on October 31st, 2008, they expected to hear from her. Annie always called her mom after school. It was a ritual or maybe a request.
I think it was more of a request.
They really liked to keep tabs on her, know what she was up to, where she was, what she was doing. Perhaps just concerned parents.
Yeah, I've seen some comments out there on the interwebs that they were overbearing, very strict, but they wanted to just monitor her Facebook activity. They just wanted to know where she was and when she was coming home, keep tabs on her. I think that's good parenting, but other people think it's overbearing.
She had recently, back then, created a Facebook account, and her parents wanted her password and login information so that they could keep an eye on it. Again, it could be concern, right?
Yeah. It's a teen daughter who is not overprotective of their teenage daughter. So Annie's supposed to come home from school and she does not return home, and she does not call her mother, and her mother immediately thinks something's wrong. Call it a motherly instinct.
Well, I think it was a breaking of a habit. Mm-hmm. And since her daughter didn't call her after school, and she always did, this is definitely a warning sign, right?
Yeah.
She called her husband, Dan, and he went home to check it out, you know, to look for her. Dan would later say that when he left for work that morning, he actually checked in her room, just kind of glanced in, and he saw her shape under the covers. So he knew that she was in bed at that time, according to him. And now he's going around the home. And what does he find, Justin?
Well, he finds a note in her bedroom saying that she's depressed, saying she doesn't want to continue living, but she wants a new start on life. She's leaving, and not to look for her.
In the note, she expressed that she had considered suicide. Then she realized that she could just start her life again, start it over. After all, she has access to a car, she has access to money, and she can take off and start over somewhere else.
She had saved up like $1,000. She had some food and her favorite clothes packed up, and she took off. So it's not real clear if she stole this $1,000 from her parents because she wasn't exactly working and stuff, or if this was money that she had acquired over time and saved up. Some of the news stories insinuate that she saved this money up, but when I was 16, I wasn't able to save $1,000 to save my life. So I don't know if this was stolen or not. The parents are very protective of her, so they would probably never admit that Annie stole the money or not.
Annie's mother, Mary Jane, had visited Annie's brother, Sam, in New York. Because she was concerned for her daughter's welfare, she and her son drove back home, which is about 6 hours drive.
They check the messages on their answering machine, and their Fairfax High School has called and reported that their son or daughter did not attend class that day. They did not get a call from a parent giving them a pass. So they know that Annie did not make it to school that day.
So they have some idea of what she took with her. Obviously, she drove the white Volvo, and she had the $1,000. She had some jewelry. She had a box of Cheerios. But within 2 days, they receive not very good news.
Yeah, there's a detective, Sean Jones, who is called to a scene in Baltimore, Maryland, at the Perkins Homes housing project. And it's a predominantly black area. Some guys throwing away some trash from a local store or from the local apartment, and finds this body. Detective Sean Jones initially thinks homicide, because what else would this be? You have a dead girl behind a building, and she looks a little beat up. So he's going with, this is foul play, and he's talking to the parents about that, but he doesn't have many leads. When they initially found her body, they also found her backpack, and the police would find a Fairfax High School hall pass and her ID in it, and realize that this wasn't a Baltimore local, and this adds to their initial, this is foul play. They'll end up recovering the car not too far from where her body was. And it appears to be dumped, and there's a bunch of trash that's been thrown out from the car. But they're able to find a fingerprint on the steering wheel or on the vehicle. And when they run that through the system, it belongs to a Darnell Kinlaw. Darnell has a record, therefore he's in the system. Not the best kid. They give him a call up and question him about this car and the dead body. He will tell investigators that a bunch of his buddies and him came across this car. They saw that there was a dead body in the back seat laid out, and they wanted to
take the car for a joyride and possibly steal some stuff if there was anything of value in the car. So they opened the door and they pulled Annie's body out and stuck it by the dumpster and then took off with her car. That sounds really suspicious and cold. I'm just going to hold my opinion on that, but they do take off with the car and end up dumping it later. Now, what all do they find in the car when they recover it, Aaron?
It seems as though they find all of her things, even the $1,000. The only thing that they can tell is missing at that point is her shoes.
So when they find her laying on the ground, she appears clothed and she's missing her shoes.
And her socks don't appear to have been dirtied.
Yeah. Just my knee-jerk reaction or response to that is somebody stole her shoes. That's the easiest explanation. And it was probably one of the guys that dumped her body or somebody else that just came along and took her shoes. She wasn't walking around barefoot in socks because they were clean and not dirty. Again, this sounds really suspicious, and I'm right there with you. It does seem very suspicious. Why would somebody come along and find a car and pull a body out and steal some shoes? You would think that dead girl behind a building, get away. You don't want to get involved with that. You don't want to be accused of anything with this. But it's Baltimore. Crime rate's a little high. People do stupid stuff, especially teen kids.
Well, and the police don't seem to go after Kinlaw very much, do they?
No, they take his word for it.
He says, yeah, I didn't harm her. I just moved her body. She was already dead. And then they seem to accept that.
Which I think he should have been pressed way harder myself. That just seems like common sense to me.
They performed an autopsy on her body and... curiously enough, the medical examiner lists lidocaine toxicity as her cause of death. The manner of death is undetermined because the medical examiner cannot tell whether it's a suicide or a homicide or an accidental death.
Exactly. Now, that trash that was thrown out of the car, well, we find some items, and one of them that has lidocaine is a product called Bactine, and it's used for piercings, ear piercings, and other type of things that teenagers get. And it's a cleansing and a pain reliever.
It's also an antiseptic. So yeah. For people who get their ears pierced, you can spray it on there. And like Justin just said, it'll help with the pain a little bit, but it'll help keep it from getting infected.
Yeah. She had her ears pierced in August, so 2.5 months earlier. And her parents claim that she was very diligent about keeping her ears cleaned, and she would treat them a couple times a day with sprays from this bottle.
And they also said that she just had the one bottle?
They only recovered one bottle from the scene where the car was dumped.
Right, so let's be clear on this. They only found one item that would have had lidocaine in it.
Yes.
And yet, as I said, the parents said that she just had the one bottle. This is important because from here on out, the parents feel as though their daughter has been murdered and that she must have been poisoned somehow. Maybe a drink was spiked with lidocaine.
Yeah.
Because they said, this is a 5-ounce bottle of Bactine. It doesn't have enough lidocaine in it to match up with the amount of lidocaine that was found in her system. We could go over these numbers, but essentially for her to have the amount of lidocaine in her system that they've discovered during the autopsy, she would have had to have had 3 bottles worth in her system ingested orally.
Exactly.
But they only recovered the one, and the parents maintained that was the bottle that she had had all along.
I don't think it was the bottle she had all along because, like I said, she had her ears pierced months before. I think she probably would have gone through a bottle by that time and had bought a new bottle, at least. Now, this bottle does not have a screw-off top. It's a childproof kind of bottle. You have to forcibly remove the top by either chewing it off, ripping it off, just whatever. You have to force this top off because it's poisonous and they don't want kids getting a hold of this. So when they find this bottle, the top has been removed. There aren't any fingerprints on it, but they do find her DNA on the lip of the bottle, meaning it appears she drank it.
So will it surprise you if the police determined that this was a suicide?
Well, we have a suicide note. We have a teen that ran away. We have lidocaine in her system. And we have a bottle that appears to have her DNA on the lip of it. So one and one is two. The cops are done with their investigation.
Let's go back to this autopsy report, though. In the autopsy report, it seems to gloss over the fact that maybe she has some injuries to her head, to her face.
Yeah, it pretty much doesn't say anything about that. The parents think she's in perfect condition and she's just been poisoned. Therefore, they can get on board with maybe she did take her own life. But as soon as they find out that there's scratches, bruises, and a goose egg size bump on her forehead that's not really mentioned, well, that kind of tips them off that there's something wrong with what the medical examiner has found, because they're pretty much saying, well, she had no signs of assault or foul play. Well, maybe she did.
When the parents finally get a hold of the images, the pictures of her, they discovered a J on one of her legs. And their worry is that it was a pre-brand, that perhaps she fell prey to a sex trafficker.
Yeah, and here's their idea. Her father says that he had to drive her to and from school a few times before she could figure out her way to school. She was not good with directions. He's saying that she just wasn't capable of finding her way to Baltimore on her own. She's on Facebook. They're monitoring it, but not really seeing that she's communicating with anyone. She somehow leaves, makes it all the way to Baltimore. She's found dead. She has this J on her leg. And once her body gets to the funeral home, the funeral director says her brain and heart were not returned to the body. How they notice this, or if this is actually true, this is according to the funeral director and the parents. But if it is true, it's just one more thing that the parents have over the medical examiner's autopsy reports and their botched analysis.
Well, the funeral director doesn't just tell them that. What else does the funeral director say?
She says there's signs of sodomy because of dilation. All I can think of when I read that was our Jeffrey Havard case, the man accused of killing a baby. And there's a huge, I don't even know if you want to call it a debate, but a lot of pathologists will say after death, your muscles will dilate or become loose. So you can't exactly say if this was an assault or rape, or if it's the body's natural reaction after death. Unless you can physically see damage, tearing, ripping, you can't jump to the conclusion that a dilation is simply that. You can't say whether or not it's an assault or not.
Well, as uncomfortable it is to talk about, it needs to be discussed, because this person at the funeral home is saying they've seen many bodies and they typically only see what they saw with Annie, with elderly people. With younger people, they never see anything like this. So that's what alerted them to a possible rape in this case.
And meanwhile, even the detectives, like, I've never seen anyone take their own life by drinking Bactine. That's just not common. So we have a lot of uncommon situations here.
They also found a mark on her face that looked very much like a cigarette burn.
Now, the parents and the funeral director think it's a cigarette burn, but everybody else just thinks it's a mark, a scratch, or an abrasion. The autopsy also revealed that she had eaten pretty much out of full stomach. before she died.
But it wasn't just a full stomach. I mean, they said she had consumed a lot.
Exactly.
Maybe it would be about how much you would eat on Thanksgiving.
Now, they don't say exactly what food was in her stomach, but they just said it was a lot. Funeral home director also points out that her fingers were pruny, as if they were submerged in water, which the parents will interpret as somebody was washing her, washing the evidence away, or submerged her to get rid of the evidence and then put her clothes back on and then moved her to the car or dumped her body where it lay. I don't have a lot of explanation of why her fingers would be pruny. That doesn't seem normal to me, but a dead body does weird things. I don't know. That seems odd.
It could be interpretation, because even Dr. Michael Bodden said he didn't believe that the fingers looked pruny at all.
The funeral home person doesn't seem to help matters with some of their observations. So her parents are really freaking out because they're thinking she's been beaten, she's been sodomized, and she's been branded. It all points to one explanation to them. And they look at the medical examiner's report, they're finding faults in it, and there is some things left out in there, definitely. So you're not going to get them to change their mind now that the investigation is botched and that their daughter has absolutely been murdered. They're on that route now, that path. They are not happy with the police investigation. They're not happy with the, I guess you could say, the results or the conclusion that the police have come up with. I mean, they've been investigating for, I think they said, an overall like 1,200 hours chasing down these leads, but they're coming up with this was suicide and case closed. Parents are not happy with this. They hire their own private investigator who happens to be an ex-Baltimore cop, and he goes out and he finds it's like an Italian pastry shop. This pastry shop is close to where her body was found and is called Vaccaro's. I hope I'm saying it right. And he goes inside and questions some of the employees and shows them pictures of Annie. And at least two of the employees say, yeah, I remember her on that day. She came in with another woman and they had coffee. The other woman she came in with looked haggard, looked weird, like a junkie or sex worker, some type like that. Not very kept. And she was older. She was possibly in her 20s, whereas Annie is obviously 16. So what was Annie doing that day with another person? Possibly an assailant, possibly somebody that had to do with her disappearance and murder.
One of the witnesses said that the woman had heavy makeup and that she had a nail polish, the color of which she'd never seen before. She described it as puke yellow.
Yeah.
This seems very, very specific. Now, the only question here that is raised is that this private investigator that was hired by the McCanns, he may have actually brought a picture of Annie that was put together by her family that had the word reward on it.
Possible motivation for someone to recognize her.
Possible motivation to also just give them a story. I don't know.
Yeah.
It kind of brings that into question is all I'm saying. If he had just brought a picture of Annie with no other information, that's one thing. But if he did bring this, what amounts to a missing / reward poster, then I don't know. Maybe people will talk because they're hoping to get some money. It's difficult to say.
Yeah. So the parents absolutely are feeling like they're having to investigate this case on their own because Baltimore PD is ineffective. They even weren't very happy with their own local department when they reported her missing because they didn't issue an Amber Alert or raise all the alarms, which possibly could have got more witnesses to her or her car, maybe found her faster. Who knows?
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called StoryWorth. StoryWorth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/GenY. That's StoryWorth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
The police department is telling the parents that they're sorry that they lost a daughter, but they believe that it was either suicide or an accidental death. And of course, the parents, they don't like hearing this at all because they feel like there are too many unanswered questions and that it seems like the police department is just moving on and they're not ready to move on.
No. And I get it. Again, there's some discrepancies here. If you're child died and you were given an autopsy report, police reports that had discrepancies in them, I don't care how truthful or how good intention those reports are, you're going to question everything. And now everything's BS and the police aren't helping you. That's just the way it is because it's a highly emotional time.
The police department maintains that the medical examiner's report indicating lidocaine toxicity is the key here. And so the parents, they want second and third opinions. They go to other experts to see what they think about this. And one of them is Dr. Michael Bodden, who is a world-renowned forensic pathologist.
I would do the same thing. I'd be right there in their shoes getting a second opinion.
And well, he's thinking about this. He's looking over the autopsy. And he determines that this just doesn't seem right because 1 5-ounce bottle of this Bactine wouldn't have enough lidocaine to poison her, not in his opinion.
They also get a senator to help put some pressure on law enforcement to get more information. They had already engaged the FBI at this point. So Senator Chuck Grassley writes some letters for them, gets a little bit more information, and they reach out to Bayer, who produces Bactine. So when the police questioned Bayer, they didn't ask enough questions and how much it takes. They just asked, how much does a bottle have? And okay, we got our answer, and we know that she had lidocaine in her system, so we're done. And I think it depends on how you look at this. If you're looking at it as the police didn't ask how many bottles would it take, well, I think the police know that it would take more than one bottle. I think the medical examiner knows that it would probably take more than one bottle to get those levels. I think the police just assume that she had multiple bottles, but her parents are going with the little information that they've been provided, which is the police believe one bottle will kill you. And they think the police are wrong or mistaken and that they should have asked Bayer, how many bottles does it take? And therefore, it would take more. There wasn't more found, so they should keep investigating. I think it's a serious miscommunication here.
Well, 2020 covered this case, and they actually talked with Dr. Bill Mannion, and he's a forensic pathologist. He looked into this, and he believes that one bottle, you know, it could kill you.
Exactly. There's nothing really for human consumption in this bottle. It's for topical only.
I need to reiterate this, but the parents absolutely believe that she had one bottle in her possession and that it was the same one. It wouldn't even be a full amount. It wouldn't be 5 ounces. It would be much less than that.
She had her ears pierced months before, at least 2 months before, and she was using this consistently on a daily basis. I don't know how many sprays are in a bottle, but if she was using it twice a day on each ear, that's at least 4 sprays a day. Go with that. When I used to use Banaca, I would go through that in like 2 weeks. I mean, it's one of those questions. And I think the parents could be wrong when they say she had one bottle of it. No, we only recovered one bottle from the scene.
So we have disagreements going on here between the authorities and between the parents and their investigators and their experts. It's almost like there's a trial going on here without a real trial. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The parents are trying to bring forth their information, and the police, as well as the FBI, who they later meet with, they just attempt to shut down the parents. Now, this kind of reaches ahead, in my opinion, when the parents, through their due diligence, they are doing the best they can to get all the information. They finally get the case file, and it's handed to them, I think, on a flash drive.
Yeah, and this is more or less that senator's doing again, and him putting pressure on the authorities and getting them to turn over more evidence.
So there's some redactions and things, but one of the things they do discover is that, in their opinion, this is early on, that the police department is trying to figure out a way to get the parents to settle down. In other words, they've already decided this must be a suicide or an accidental death. And yet the parents keep coming to them and saying, someone murdered our daughter. So they're trying to come up with a way to get them to basically go away. Like, how do we appease them so that they'll leave us alone? And they even talk about in these reports, they talk about how some detectives didn't even want to work the case because they didn't want to deal with these parents.
They're very tenacious parents.
But this is kind of upsetting because, and this reminds me of the Kendrick Johnson case where, okay, so the police feel that they know what happened. They have their theory. They feel like the case can be closed, but you have parents who have lost a child. So yeah, maybe they don't accept your theory. Is that the way to treat them though, is to be dismissive of them?
That's something that law enforcement, it just depends on who you get. The bedside manner can be really bad and very dismissive. When you're out every day patrolling, finding dead bodies, arresting horrible people, you become numb to it. This is all that world, and you're callous. You don't know how you come off to somebody who their whole world now is destroyed because their daughter's dead.
But is it possible, though, that the parents just took it the wrong way? I mean, on the police side, they're just trying to do their job. They feel like they completed the investigation and now they're trying to work other cases. And yet the parents keep coming back to them and asking questions and trying to give them information when they're moving on.
Yeah. Well, they got the FBI to investigate, and the FBI looked over law enforcement's findings. And the FBI's findings were, they concurred with the police findings. But again, this is all law enforcement. So now the parents, I'm sure, feel like, well, of course they would find on the side of law enforcement because they're law enforcement too.
Well, possibly. But the parents wrote about this in an article. I should say Mary Jane, Annie's mother, did. And she talked about how they had to go to this building, this cold-looking building, to meet with the FBI. And as the FBI was questioned further and further about different aspects of the case, the parents felt as though they actually didn't know as much as they led them to believe that they did. So the parents left there after pretty much getting sent off, hurt and probably feeling a bit lost, because this is the FBI. And it felt to them as if the FBI basically said, yeah, we looked over the case file and stuff, and we feel like they did an adequate investigation. So there's nothing to see here.
Well, the parents are eating, living, breathing this case. They know it inside and out. So you get some FBI PR guy who's trying to appease them. Well, yeah, that's probably not going to go well.
We could keep going on with the different findings and the different experts and what they said, and this person said that. That's where we're at.
So 3 years after the finding of Annie's body, remember our friend Darnell Kinlaw? Well, he ends up murdering another woman and stealing her car. Now, he ends up murdering Lakeisha Player, who happens to be his girlfriend, and he shoots her. So Darnell, original person who found Annie's body and stole her car, has been accused and charged with murdering another woman and stealing her car.
So, of course, the parents latch onto this and think there might be more to this Darnell Kinlaw than we had suspected.
Well, hell, that was my reaction too when I heard it. I was like, what? No, this guy is no good. And he absolutely had something to do with this.
So the authorities go and visit Darnell Kinlaw. According to the news that the parents hear, how do they start this short little interview with Darnell?
Well, they seem pretty dismissive in their initial interaction with him, right?
The way they come off in the interview with Darnell is they basically start off by saying that Annie's parents aren't letting this go, so we're basically obligated to come and talk with you.
Like, we already know you had nothing to do with this, but here we are. And this is a guy that just murdered his girlfriend.
It's almost like they're on his side.
I would think that they could press a little harder here.
So for these parents who have lost their child and don't feel like they're getting answers, they don't feel like law enforcement is taking the death of their daughter seriously, it's like the hits just keep coming.
Yeah. Again, a guy and his friends coming across a car with a dead girl in it, dragging her body out and then taking off the car. That seems really suspicious. Now add in that that same guy is now sitting behind bars for 30 years for murdering his girlfriend. But the way the parents frame it is he murdered a woman and stole her car. Well, that sounds very similar to their daughter's situation, but it was somebody he knew and he shot her. Not quite the same situation.
Do you think that the authorities look at Darnell and think, well, if he had actually had anything to do with the demise of Annie McCann, he would have said so, right? Because he did confess to killing Lakeisha Player.
That's the thing, is he's serving a 30-year sentence. He probably thinks he can get out in 20 on good behavior. So why would he confess to anything else?
But do you really think he had anything to do with her death, though?
I think he looks like a really shady character. But if you're pressing me to give a yes or no, I can't do that right now. If we're going to go with the murder theory, here we have a 16-year-old runaway. But was she running away or was she meeting somebody who was either traveling with her or giving her directions? If we're going to go with the parents' theory of that she was forced into sex trafficking, she was with this woman at a pastry coffee shop and then later on found dead with a branding on her leg. If you want to think Darnell did it, then great. If not, then she was murdered or poisoned before Darnell found her, and he just happens to be the lucky guy that came across her body. That's, I guess that would be my summary of the murder theory, right? They attacked her, they raped her, and they poisoned her with lidocaine. I myself have never heard of somebody murdering somebody else with lidocaine, but then again, I've never heard of somebody taking their own life with lidocaine either. So It's kind of half dozen one, six of the other, right? Now, if we go with the suicide theory.
Or accidental death.
She had written not one, but several notes talking about how unhappy she was, talking about how she wants to end it all, talking about sort of spontaneous destructive behavior, like I'm going to run away and start over. I'm a 16-year-old who doesn't know anything about life, but I'm going to take off in a car with $1,000, go who knows where. I think you can get on the highway and you can end up anywhere. I don't think you really have to be good with directions. In fact, the worse you are with directions, the more likely you are going to show up in the middle of a bad neighborhood.
We need to talk about these notes because there were a couple of notes that were crumpled up underneath her bed. And when they looked at these notes, meaning the parents, the investigators, Annie had crossed out what she had written. There were large X's, essentially, on these notes. And these were the notes that indicated that she wanted to end her own life. Those were crumpled, thrown under her bed. The note that was left on top was the one where she admitted that she had considered suicide, but then she realized that she could just run away. And she said that she loved life and she was ready to live. So she didn't want her parents coming after her, but that she would be okay. So it's a runaway note. It's I'm leaving and just leave me alone. And you go back and you listen to interviews with the parents. They will say she was very happy. She had a close circle of friends and she was living a very good life. She didn't drink. She didn't smoke. She didn't go out. She went to school and she came home. And she was very reliable. She always called her mom after school. She enjoyed going to church. She believed in her faith, which was she was a Catholic. So this is very much at odds with the young girl that her parents paint a picture of for you. According to these notes that she's writing, she has depression and she's anorexic.
Yeah. All due respect to the parents, they've gone through a nightmare. But they don't seem to really accept that they had a troubled child. Now, I get that you have your perceptions. I get that you have what you want to remember your child as. But their own admission is she was a happy-go-lucky kid. And it's like these notes don't even matter. What she wrote is inconsequential. They were, I'm leaving and I'm going to go start my new life. And they completely disregard the I'm unhappy with life, I'm anorexic, and I want to kill myself. That just doesn't seem to even click with the parents at all.
Well, and we've discussed this before, but mental illness is not something that most people really understand or even recognize.
Yeah,
we see that all the time with our justice system, but Annie herself said that she was anorexic in these notes, and anorexia carries four times the risk of death as major depression. And it said that the mortality rate of people with anorexia is more than 5 deaths per 1,000 people. The deadliest mental illness if you look at the mortality rate.
Exactly. It's very lethal. I look at, she fully admits that she's anorexic, but she's found with a full stomach of food. It's a little off here. Now I'm thinking, I've interviewed guests on my peripheral podcast about bulimia. She says she's anorexic, but eating disorders can blend. I'm thinking this bottle of Bactine, a lot of the symptoms of overdose or symptoms of poisoning are, it can make you throw up. I don't know how much she drank. I think she drank more than a bottle. I think she was probably doing it over time. And she might have been doing it to purge. It's a theory. It's just an idea. I'm not saying this is what happened, but I see a lot of people say murder or suicide. I think it might have been accidental. She might have been trying to purge, and she was using this to do it. I could be totally off base.
Well, if we think back to the eyewitness reports who said they saw her eating, she was at the bakery in Little Italy. Who knows? Maybe she had been going around and eating, and then, like you said, maybe she wanted to purge. And since she had been using Bactine for a number of months, maybe she had found that she could induce vomiting with it and would use that to purge. After all, just look at pictures of Annie. They even have a picture of Annie the day before she went missing. So they have a picture from October 30th. She's anorexic. It's pretty obvious.
With any eating disorder, it just causes havoc with your body and your system. The only reason why I think she drank more than one bottle, which caused her death, is because of the amount of lidocaine they found in her system. I wouldn't be surprised if one bottle would have killed her. Because if you're going in the red, if you're starving yourself, if you're not hydrated, all these factors, well, all of a sudden you're a lot more susceptible to poisoning, to drugs, to other things. I'm just throwing it out there, kind of talking out loud, not saying that that's how I come down, but it's just an angle that I haven't read anywhere. I think that it could have been accidental, but with going with all the suicide notes, well, now you're back to, well, it might have been intentional. Parents have lots of issues with, why did she go to Baltimore to do this? You know, a lot of people say, why did she do it this way? Why did she drink Bactine to take her own life? That's just weird. No one would do that. Why would anyone take their own life? I mean, that's, you're not thinking logically anymore. You're going against all self-preservation and instinct. So I kind of throw out what you logically would or wouldn't do at that point if that's your end goal.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Why wouldn't it be logical, though, if her parents are very controlling and she needed to get away to do this?
Yeah. And her parents didn't know about this, or they don't admit to it. I don't know if that's a saving face thing or if they just have no clue what's going on in their daughter's life. And I feel horrible saying that because they've gone through hell. But from an outside point of view, it's a little bit clearer.
We've already talked about how people had said that they believe the parents were very controlling. After all, she didn't get to go anywhere. I mean, she literally went to school. She would come home. The parents knew everything about what she was up to, except for, of course, her depression and anorexia, as far as we know. They never let on that they did know about that. But according to them, she was happy. She was a great kid. But she takes off and goes to Baltimore, Maryland. And for me, another possibility is that she wanted to go and live a little bit. Just because she said that she decided not to take her own life doesn't mean that she didn't change her mind out there. So it could be either way. And that's where it seems like the police could be correct. Either she did change her mind and decide to take her life, or as Justin has theorized, maybe she did accidentally take too much Bactine. The parents say that they ran a test to see what other substances she may have consumed, and that if she had taken multiple bottles of Bactine, that other things would have shown up that are ingredients in Bactine, but that they don't find those things. So the parents are very much in the camp that their daughter must have been poisoned with lidocaine, not Bactine, but lidocaine.
She was forced to drink it, or was injected with it, something to that effect. Or somebody put, like, mixed a bad drink, you know, with Coca-Cola or something else.
Or alcohol.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to explain how she had alcohol in her system, which amounted to just about a drink.
Yeah, it was 0.04 or something.
So again, if you're looking for a straight answer in this case, you're probably not going to find it. It's going to come down to how much do you factor in her anorexia and her depression, and how much you weigh the words of her parents.
I mean, her parents say she withdrew, or she took $1,000, some clothes. She had a list of to-do things on her hand, little things like that. And they're like, people that are going to take their own life, don't do this. And I'm thinking, you don't know what depression is. I don't think they quite understand.
Yeah, I wouldn't feel comfortable trying to explain her depression. I think everyone's depression is probably somewhat unique to them and how they deal with it, especially if it's coming to a head. If she's writing these notes that indicate that she was ready to end her own life, then I think that's a pretty big factor. And I know one of the things Justin and I talked about before we even started recording was, how can we come down on a side on this case? Because everywhere I look, everyone's doing that. Everyone's saying this is definitely a suicide. This is an accidental death, which seems kind of rare from the posts I read, or that she was murdered. And yeah, I just have a problem coming down too firmly on one side, because one, we don't have all the evidence, I feel. Without having other bottles of Bactine or a source of this lidocaine, that it's really, really difficult to say what happened to her. Sure, I can say her injuries that she sustained probably happened when she went into a seizure or something. You know, if she was poisoned and she had a seizure, she could have hurt herself. Or if she wasn't quite deceased when those guys found her and they tossed her behind the dumpster, she could have sustained injuries there. We also don't know what happened to her body while it was behind the dumpster. Anything could have happened. It's not like we had a camera there.
And this J on her ankle, they explain it as lividity, the pooling of the blood, and it just happened to pool that way. Possibly her leg was, you know, crossed on her other leg, so it just went around the impression. She wasn't wearing socks that had a big J on them, so I don't think it was any kind of clothing that caused it.
But yeah, I don't know. I looked at the picture, and the picture's not very good quality. It does look like a J, but the bottom of the J doesn't look right. Could be pareidolia, where we're looking and we're seeing a pattern that really isn't there. But I personally don't buy it. But maybe if I had a better, like a higher quality picture, an image to look at, then maybe I would change my mind. But the quality of the picture that I see online is not good enough. I believe that the parents have kind of messed with the pictures a little bit, not to change what we see, but just to lower the quality, because these pictures bother them and they've admitted as much. So it's difficult for them to share all of the information they have because it's painful for them. Here's the question, Justin. I mean, do we need to come down on a side on this? I feel like if we just put out all of the theories, that people can make up their own mind if they want, or they can just realize that in the end, what matters most here is that we know she was anorexic and we know she had depression. And for all of the control that they had over her life and being involved in what activities she was up to, it seems like they missed the boat on this. And for her to be writing notes, or just look at her, she's anorexic.
Yeah.
She's underweight. She has an eating disorder. This is a real concern. And I think that is the question I'm left with, is why couldn't they have recognized what was going on with her before she ran away from home? Because again, if she was happy at home, she wouldn't have run away.
Yeah. I just the other day, Aurelia had asked me how I felt about this case. And I said, I'm leaning towards suicide. But every day this week, I felt differently. I don't know. I think it's possible she could have been murdered, but we can't prove it. I think it's very possible she took her own life or accidentally took her life. It's really hard to prove with what we have left. And that's the problem. And I know parents whose children have tested positive for meth, but then lied and said, oh, it was Sudafed or it was some allergy medicine. And the parents are like, oh, okay. I've seen denial in my own life, extreme denial. And when it comes to Annie's parents, I think there's a little bit of that happening. Now, I don't think they're bad parents. I don't think that, I don't know if they were overbearing or not, but they definitely have a misperception of their daughter, and I understand why. She looks like a good kid, but she had problems and they don't want to accept those things.
I believe they lost their daughter the day she ran away. By then it was too late.
The PI and the medical examiner that they hired, they still will come down on, they think it was foul play, but they disregard the sexual assault or the sodomy. They disregard a lot of the beliefs that the parents have. If you're connecting the dots and believing every single piece of this, well, now all of a sudden, not all the dots should be involved or included because there isn't a lot of evidence for some of these allegations.
One other thing I'd like to talk about is Keith Avlow. He's a psychiatrist, and he talked about the method, the cause of death. According to the medical examiner, she used what was available, which was the Bactine. It had lidocaine in it. And that's what they found in her system that would explain why she died. Keith Avlow said, "It strains the imagination to believe that a person intent on dying would choose this obscure and extremely uncertain method of attempting to take her life. One, just like the medical examiner said, she used what was available. So it's not that obscure for her. And also, when someone's intent on dying, I mean, think about some of the methods that they use. You don't know if you jump off if you're going to die. Some people jump from just a few floors up. People, when they reach that state, seem to, again, use whatever method is at hand. And sometimes their methods confuse us. We don't know why they would end their life in the way that they do. But I find it interesting that he thinks that this just seems so unlikely when, of the items that she had with her, this was what was at hand, was her Bactine.
So she ran away from home. She has admitted to a lot of issues, depression. Her life was obviously not on the straight and narrow anymore. She was in a desperate state. The parents don't seem to want to accept that, which that's a problem I have. But when she goes out and she finds herself in a strange place, maybe she's thinking she's going to start her life over, but it doesn't work out the way she wants. There is a lot of information and details about the way she was found, what was found with her, but I can't get over the fact that she ran away from home. She had lidocaine in her system. She had a bottle of Bactine that has lidocaine in it. The top was removed, and it appeared she drank from it. All of a sudden, everything else, I guess I'm kind of feeling like the police here. Everything else seems pretty inconsequential to me. But all the other things do hold a lot of weight because they make you question. Her parents have found some solace in this. They connected with Lakeisha Player's mother, woman who was murdered, and they actually gave her Annie's car, the white Volvo. They didn't want the car anymore. They were going to have it crushed, but she needed a car. She was in need. So they gave their daughter's car away. That's, I guess that's a silver lining. It's closure in my mind of we're moving on a little bit here. We're able to let go and help somebody else. And I hope they keep following that path.
Well, originally they had kept the car and were hoping that they could get investigators to take another look at it. But by letting the car go, that is them letting go a little bit, I would say.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they've completely let go because the mother is still out there. She's still talking about this and she gets on Twitter now and then. And she's definitely tried to connect with other parents who have lost children under mysterious circumstances.
Thank you.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.